Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Thursday. About ready to go. Baseball games today. This, live in Los Angeles, is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. I just had a buddy in Italy this morning, said, oh, I love the show. And I'm like, in Italy? Hell yeah. Lists, everything you guys do. It's amazing. It's amazing, the global possibilities.
The global reach. I just did an interview in Melbourne, Australia, last week. They're big fans of the show.
It's just, I can't even imagine that. I don't even know what's going on.
We do great lists, I guess.
Do they have YouTube? I mean, I'm sounding completely ignorant here. YouTube is global, right? Everybody knows that, right?
Yeah. And, I mean,
but there are restrictions on what TV you can watch. We can't watch British TV. There are certain things that are stopped. They can't just get free NFL games over there. There are things that are restrictions.
I've never been to Australia. It's on my list. Maybe I'll hit them up and ask them. I don't know. They said they watch the show, or maybe they listen. Because you can listen online. So
does XM Sirius, does that reach the cars in Australia? I sound so stupid. I don't know.
I don't know. You're asking me questions that I don't
have the answer
to.
I don't have the answer to either. But it's just so funny. A buddy this morning texted me in Italy, oh, can't wait for the show. What does that mean? You're watching the show?
I don't know. Maybe there's like an illegal stream.
Oh, that would be him. He's very illegal and streamy. So I want to start with this. You can develop a lot of things. A quarterback, you can develop an arm. One of the reasons I thought Zion was going to be a really good player, when people said, we can't shoot, I said, time out. He's like 18 years old. You can develop into a great shooter. Don't worry about that. Very few guys come into the NBA and they're great shooters. I mean, in baseball, you can develop a number 2 pitch and a number 3 pitch. You can develop almost anything as long as God gave you some genetic gifts, strength, size, you know, athletic ability. Here's what you can't develop. Charisma. You've got it or you don't. And I can see fakers every day. Some people just have charisma and they have it. And Zion's got it. I like a lot of it. He has no current timetable to return to Orlando. He went home for a family emergency, and the NBA is freaking out. And they should be. Zion's the number 2 draw in this league right now. And I'm not joking. LeBron's 1, Zion's 2. He's the number 2 draw in this league. The NBA could have chosen any team to start the bubble. Westbrook and Harden. The Celtics. I mean, Giannis. They chose a rookie who played like 30 games. That's who they chose. He broke summer league records. They made an exemption for him in the rookie sophomore NBA All-Star game thing. They made an exemption for him. The league's got the research. He's the second biggest star in the league. I knew he could develop a jumper. I never hold that against basketball players. They're kids. God, they went to class. Now you just spend all day in a gym. Ray Allen didn't break into the league that good of a shooter. He was an athletic kid who scored at the rim. He became the great Ray Allen the shooter. But Zion's charisma, smile, style, power, Duke, shoe controversy, you can't teach it. You cannot develop it. You name the players in any professional sport in America that have become superstars and it's been developed in their late 20s, early 30s. There's none. Michael Jordan was selling shoes early. Tiger Woods was a star at 16 years old. LeBron was a star in high school. Bryce Harper, cover of Sports Illustrated. By the way, winning doesn't make you a superstar. Tim Duncan, put people to sleep. Shoe deals don't make you superstars. Spencer Dinwiddie has a shoe deal. So does John Wall. So does Lonzo Ball. It's it. Dr. J, Magic, Michael, LeBron, Zion, Tiger, Mahomes. You don't develop. There's a million agents out there trying to make their clients bigger. But that charisma, the it thing, you can't develop it. You got it or you don't. Shoe deals don't make it. There are a lot of guys with shoe deals that aren't superstars. Winning doesn't. I'll give you an example. Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis, Zion went to Duke. He was out of the tournament real quick. Anthony Davis went to Kentucky, which is about as close to Duke as college basketball has. Unlike Zion, he went all the way through the tournament. And he won. And he had a nickname, Unibrow. And people were saying he's the best college player in a decade. Nobody was saying Zion was the best college basketball player for a decade. And Anthony Davis goes to New Orleans. Nothing. No TV ratings. League's not scheduling games for him. Shoe deals. Nothing. Even now, he's LeBron's Robin. That's Zion. This is an American superstar. It's not going to be a shoe deal. It's not going to be his winning. That kid walks into a room. The smile, the look, the style, the power. He's not in the bubble. They don't know when he's in the bubble. And I got news for you. They scheduled opening day with Zion, Christmas day with Zion, and the bubble game with Zion. And he's not here. And they're freaking out. And I remember I had a conversation about 5 months ago with Mark Cuban, Dallas Mavericks owner. And the NBA ratings were down. And I was emailing. Anybody in the world could email Mark Cuban. He emails you right back. I mean, you'd think for a guy that, you know, owns 100 companies, he'd be busy. And I said, hey, Mark, it's Colin, blah, blah, blah. Well, he knew that because of my email address. And I said, I think the ratings are down. I think you're wrong on your reasoning. I think it's because all the stars are hurt. Like KD was hurt and Steph was hurt. And he goes, Colin, do you know how few people in this league move a quarter of a rating point? He's like, I think it's one or two. And for all the talent in the NBA, it doesn't have more than two players, maybe three with Steph, that literally change a television rating. And that's in a sport that is star-driven because not that many basketball players have charisma or showmen. Michael was, Magic was, Dr. J was. That's about it. The list is really short, and it's amazing that a 19-year-old who's played 30 games already has it. And once you have it, it's hard to lose it. All right, so I saw this. Baseball starting today. Baseball games. Going to break that stuff down. Breaking down bullpens next hour. By the way, top of next hour, going to make a lot of you mad. And I feel so strongly about this. I'm quadrupling down on something. I feel so strongly about it. And you're all going to be furious with me in 45 minutes from now. But I want to go to this. The Dodgers yesterday signed Mookie Betts. Mookie Betts is a great baseball player. Played for the Boston Red Sox. People think Mike Trout's the best player, Mookie Betts, second best player. But when Mike Trout signed a deal with the Angels, I said, that's a bad deal. $450 million. The Angels don't drive the revenue for that. They're going to have to now not be able to spend on the big setup man. They won't be able to get a number three starter. They're going to have to lose in free agency to probably a really valuable middle infielder. I didn't like the Mike Trout deal. But I thought Mike Trout to the Dodgers or the Yankees would have been a great deal. The reason this is a great deal, and the Dodgers don't spend a lot of money. You would think the Yankees throw bad contracts and big contracts at people forever. But the Dodgers don't. Manny Machado, passed. Bryce Harper contract, passed. Zach Greinke, passed. Clayton Kershaw's it. Mookie Betts is number two. But it's a great contract because the Dodgers lead Major League Baseball in attendance by a long shot. And if you've ever been to Dodger Stadium, man, they have got it figured out. The food, the drinks, the alcohol, it is a ATM, man. It is a bank. They have figured out how to, when you walk through that gate, you're bringing out your credit card. And you don't feel ripped off, and you don't feel it's a bad deal because it's 75 degrees. The stadium is beautiful. They always win the division. It's really a very charming experience. And it's like going to Dodger games in Los Angeles is just part of living here. 5 million people. They lead the, and their revenue on an annual basis is $556 million. So what if you're paying Mookie Betts $30 million a year? So what? The Angels' revenue is $200 million a year less than that, and they pay Mike Trout $5 million more a year. Then it's an issue. Like, big contracts in baseball. The Dodgers have been throwing bad contracts and big contracts for people for 25 years. They haven't had a losing season since 92. But when the Reds signed Joey Votto and the Mariners signed Robinson Cano and when the Padres signed Manny Machado, and when you start looking at those are bad contracts because they then limit what you can do in baseball. You can't win a World Series with a bad bullpen. You can't win a World Series with a bad middle infield. You'd almost always have to have a legitimate number two and three starter. Mookie Betts to the Dodgers is a great contract. Gerrit Cole to the Yankees, those are great contracts. They're nightmare contracts for anybody else. Completely limiting. In fact, with the Dodgers and the Yankees, the only question is from the ownership groups, do you feel like spending the money? You got it. You know, buying a Lamborghini by a school teacher is horrible financial judgment. Buying a Lamborghini for a CEO of a hedge fund, you could justify it. You got $14 million coming in a year, $9 million bonuses. You can justify it. I'm not a Lambo guy. You know, think they're kind of cheesy. Saw one on the road the other day. But, you know, whatever. You can justify it. Most of Major League Baseball is closer to the school teacher budget than they are to the hedge fund budget. And when I look at the Mookie Betts deal, I'm like, $350 million, $30 million a year, 12 years, Mookie Betts? Have you gone to a Dodger game? And it's just, they're just filing wallets into that stadium. $5 million a year. They figured it out. They got nothing but money. It's part of the culture, like the Yankees in New York, from the cable deal to the attendance to what they charge to the parking. It makes complete, utter, total sense. And the Dodgers have shown a reluctance to just hand over big money deals. There's a reason they did. This makes total sense for arguably the best player in baseball. And the season starts today, and Dodger fans are going to get a chance to look at Mookie Betts a lot over the next 4 months.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So Cam Newton has arrived officially in Boston. Listen, New England's not going to change the culture for a quarterback that's been 500 the last 4 years, and they're not paying anything to. They're not going to change their culture. Why should they? They're the gold standard. Cam's not. Cam's a fantastically stylish and talented player, but they're not changing their culture for him. And this is a big deal for Cam. This is not a big deal for Belichick. He's got the bust made. He's a Hall of Famer. He's the best quarterback coach ever. Nobody's ever, doesn't matter if he goes 0-16, has no effect on him. He doesn't care about Cam's MVP. He doesn't care about Cam's one Super Bowl. He's been to 9. Belichick doesn't care. If you think at this point in his career, Belichick's going to be, you know, wildly flexible on his culture, he's just not going to be. I mean, I think Bill's always evolving, but there are limitations to what people are, right? It's been established, best football coach of all time. But this is a big deal for Cam. There was no market for Cam. And that's why he's basically playing for league minimum. There's no market for him. He's got 5 strikes against him if this doesn't work. Number one strike is he couldn't win with Belichick. Number two is he's kind of become a 500 quarterback. Number three is, man, he's got 2 major surgeries in the last couple of years. Number four is, Ron Rivera took his backup. Not interested in him. Sean McDermott, he would have been a great backup or a fit in with Josh Allen in Buffalo. Not interested in him. And then there's also, you know, number five is, you know, Cam comes with some Camness. He's you know, the style, the ego. There's a little bit of that a lot of coaches historically are not into. Whatevs. But this is a big deal for Cam because he didn't have a market going into this. There are just so many great young quarterbacks in the NFL under 27 right now. And we got 3 more coming in the next draft. Like, nobody's going to roll the dice on a guy that couldn't work with Belichick, 2 major surgeries, 31, been hit a lot. They're just not. There's a surplus of unbelievably focused, driven, aspirational, talented. I mean, we could have 3 in the AFC West. We could have 3 with Goff, Kyler Murray, and Jimmy Garoppolo in the NFC West. You could have 6 out of 8 teams in the Western Division that have stars for the next 12 years. College is just a conveyor belt now of great young talent. Even guys that like Josh Allen, bust. Playoffs. Lamar Jackson, project MVP. Patrick Mahomes, Big 12, best quarterback ever. Like, So this is a big deal for Cam. It's got to work. Got to open the market back up for him. It's got to be joyful. It's got to be winning. It's got to be positive. And he walked into Boston yesterday, and this is the Patriot way.
Cam, I'm so sorry to do this to you. You're live right now with Channel 7. I'm sorry. I know you didn't want to talk. Anything that you can say to Patriots Nation right now, again, you're live with Channel 7.
No disrespect to nobody, but I'm extremely ecstatic. But I'm not talking. That's pretty much, you know.
When can we expect you to say a few more words for us?
Who knows?
Excited to be here in Boston?
Go Pats. Thank you.
That is discipline. That is the Patriot way. This is a big deal for Cam. It's a big deal, okay? New England, they have the standard. Cam's got to reboot and reset his standard. He's got to prove to people, those were injuries, I'm healthy, I'm good, I'm flexible, I'm nimble, I can work in this system. Superman, there have been 11 different actors that have played Superman. Nicolas Cage is going to be the 12th. Superman gets replaced. All the time. Lamar Jackson could be the next Superman. Patrick Mahomes feels like the next Superman. Russell Wilson last several years feels kind of like Superman. I mean, Aaron Rodgers was the GOAT. And now it looks like in Green Bay, and he's healthy, looks like they're going to become a power running team. And that's with Matt LaFleur, not a Hall of Fame coach. So it matters. This is important for Cam, and that is the Patriot way.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
So like many of you, I like documentaries, and I love sports documentaries. And it's a great way. I mean, the MJ documentary was my favorite sports documentary of all time. But, you know, it encapsulates in a short amount of time a legacy. And it's hard to, I mean, I watched every bit of Jordan, and I didn't discover a ton of new stuff, but it gave me the insight to the relationships and the struggles, and it made me appreciate Michael Jordan more. Although there wasn't a ton of new information, we all, you know, I'd watched the Jerry Krause nonsense and the Dennis Rodman silliness, but it did give me an insight to really how much Michael struggled, everything. And I've always thought the 130 for 30, ESPN does these documentaries, the one they've missed on, because I've watched virtually every one. Some are great, handful are great, most are solid, a couple bore me to tears. But I've never figured out why nobody's ever done a documentary on Wilt Chamberlain. Wilt Chamberlain's the greatest physical specimen in the history of the NBA. It's not even close. I'll give you a stat. Wilt's the only guy in the same season to lead the NBA in points and rebounds. And he did it 6 times. Wilt Chamberlain one year decided in the 60s as a center. He was leading the NBA and everything. He's like, I'm going to lead the league in assists. This is the 60s. He's a center. He had 702 assists. He led the NBA. He led the NBA 9 times as a physical specimen in minutes played. One year, he actually led the NBA in minutes played, and he averaged more minutes then games are long. I'm not making that up. He played every minute of every game and then played overtime. His minute average was more than actual game time. There has never been anything like Wilt Chamberlain. Ever. There's nothing like him. Not Michael, not Russell, not Bird, not Matt. Nobody's close. Nothing close to him. There's never been a 30 for 30 on him. And he was glamorous. And he was weird, and he was flaky, and he was amazing. No 30 for 30. What's going on? I don't understand it. You're doing stuff on guys who ride bicycles and do jumps. I don't get it. I've seen 18 of them are boxing. No Wilt 30 for 30. Andre the Giant, I see wrestlers. No Wilt. The reason I bring this up is yesterday Damian Lillard was talking, or a couple days ago, and one of the things he said, it was a Dan Patrick show, he was talking about who he would give to the MVP. And Damian Lillard said, listen, they're both great, but like in year 17, LeBron leads the league in assists. And I thought to myself, it's Wilt. Is that we always compare LeBron to Michael Jordan because of the two best players ever, the GOAT. And then I've said there is a Magic Johnson to LeBron where he makes everybody better. Like Michael didn't make everybody better. Magic and LeBron make everybody better. The water boy, the assistant coach, the guy off the bench, everybody with Magic was better. You played with Magic. It was your best part of your career. But LeBron really is Wilt. LeBron is Wilt. He's the second greatest physical specimen ever. LeBron did not have a single injury of note for 16 years. and was leading the NBA in minutes. That's unheard of. It's just at this level of competition with the athletes today to not have injuries for 16 years makes no sense. And now in LeBron, in his 17th year with a new roster and a coach, says, I'm going to change positions and be the best in the world at the thing we want our point guards to do. Ask yourself today. You're a general manager of an NBA team. Russell Westbrook's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. If I said LeBron or Westbrook's your point guard next 2 years, you'd take LeBron. And Westbrook's a first ballot Hall of Fame point guard. I mean, I may have my issues with him, but I'd vote him into the Hall of Fame. It's over. I'd vote him now, today. If he quit today, I'd vote him in. This is amazing. LeBron has, what you're looking at here is, you know, there's going to be several chapters of the LeBron book. He's great, the chosen one. One of them is, I always said the second chapter is, physically, it makes no sense. He was the fastest and the strongest player simultaneously in the NBA for years. I mean, remember when he used to chase people down and get those blocks from behind? He was a power forward. That's what, he's the only player in my life, LeBron James, the only player in my life can guard the center, can guard the point guard. I think one of the most amazing things LeBron James ever did, he got into a playoff series. I think it was a second-round playoff series against Chicago. Derrick Rose was the MVP, and LeBron said, I'm going to guard him in the fourth quarter. And Derrick Rose was therefore atrocious. Derrick Rose literally evaporated. Michael Jordan struggled to guard little, tiny, quick Allen Iverson. LeBron's bigger than Michael, 35 pounds heavier, 3 inches taller, and said, I'll guard small, explosive Derrick Rose, and completely shut him down. We've never had that. That's never existed in the history of the NBA. So, here's some of the funny Wilt stats. He's got the top four scoring averages of all time. Not Michael. Wilt's got all of them. He once averaged 50.5, 38, 44, and 37. Only NBA player to lead in points and rebounds in the same year. He did it 6 times. Here's the other one. Wilt had a 100-point game. We know that. He had 5 70-point games. Wilt had 32 60-point games. Kobe's next. He had 6. Folks, there was no 3-pointer then. How? It doesn't make any sense. So when I look at LeBron, I see Wilt. And I think Damian Lillard really capsulizes what I thought. This is why I'd give LeBron the MVP. 17th year. If you're asking Giannis to play point guard and he then leads the NBA in assists, LeBron's become a little bit of a victim of LeBron. And Jordan was like this too, is that you start watching Jordan's documentary and it's like, you know, his bad games, he has 28. Like his flu game is a down game. Remember what Jerry Sloan said after the flu game? I didn't know he had the flu. He was the best player on the floor. I didn't know he had the flu. I mean, we look at the flu game, we're like, if guys have flus all the time, Jordan was still the best player easily on the floor. I always tell the story. I saw Michael Jordan in Portland, his last game in Portland. And Portland was pretty good. They had Bonzi. Well, they had good players. He was the best player. I think he had like 35, best player on the floor. And Michael was just limping to the end. I mean, the career was over. And I was sitting in the second row behind the basket with my friend Brian. And women were still like fawning over him and talking to him out of bounds. He played for a bad Wizards team. And every single young player on the floor at 25, 26 for Portland. Portland was a playoff team. Portland had good players. Michael was easily the best. Easily the best player that night. So, you know, people forget we kind of marginalized Michael's ending in Washington. Team was bad. Michael could still get you 40.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
So I got into this yesterday, is that we tend to like people to fit into the boxes. And if they don't, it's remarkable that it's taken like 6 years of Russell Wilson being ridiculous until everybody now is acknowledging, oh, God, he's ridiculous. He's the best or second-best quarterback in the league. Like, now everybody's in on it. I've been saying this for years. I'm like, just because he looks different, plays different. I saw Steve Young go through this entire thing. And Kawhi Leonard is very unique. He doesn't talk. He's got no style. He's great. He's got no shoe deal. I mean, he literally chose the Clippers over the Lakers. He didn't get along with Popovich. They sent him to Canada. His laugh is weird. He's different. He's not like glamorous Michael Jordan or talkative verbal LeBron James or smile every time you saw him, Magic Johnson. He's not like our stars. He's much closer to John Stockton, who hated the media. But as of this morning, so I am really in on this thing. So as of this morning, there are he's starting to get into clubs that nobody else in the league is in. Now, the NBA's got, you know, 13 guys a team, you know, 30 teams, thousands of players in its history. And I have said, if Kawhi Leonard in 2.5-3 months is holding up a trophy, is holding up the championship trophy, he's a top 10 player in the league all time. I'm going to say it today. He's a top 5 player. He's a top 5 player of all time. Here's why. You tell me it's championships. You tell me this is winning matters. Okay, winning matters. As of this morning, he's in this club. This is a very elite club. In the history of the NBA, you've been a finals winner and MVP with two different teams. Kareem, LeBron, and Kawhi. Now, let's just talk about that for a second. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is the greatest big man in the history of the league. He's the leading scorer in the history of the league. He created the shot that is, without question, the most unstoppable shot, the skyhook, in the history of the league. You couldn't block it. The second guy is LeBron James, first or second best player ever. The third is Kawhi Leonard. So I would say this is a fairly elite club. Think about how many great players there are. Michael Jordan's not in that list. Magic Johnson's not in that list. Larry Bird, Jerry West, Tim all the great players. He wins this year. He's in that club. Okay. So here's another club. The super elite club, where you've been a finals MVP and a defensive player of the year. Not a lot of guys in the NBA are great defenders. There's about 5, 6, 7 guys every year in the league that are really good defenders. Michael, Akeem, and Kawhi Leonard. So that's that club. So you dominate the finals. You're the best player in the biggest games. You're also the best defensive player in the year. That, by the way, wasn't that always the thing with Jordan? You needed a stop. You needed a shot. That was Michael. But we're not done. Now we're going to go to the VIP Elite GOAT Club, where you've been the best player in the finals, MVP, a defensive player of the year, and you've been an MVP in the All-Star game, which is the world's best basketball players, and you're the best one there. Michael and Kawhi. Bruh, how many more clubs you want? How many more clubs you got to be in? You notice who's in these clubs? The 10, 12 best, all the guys he's in the clubs with. Michael, Kareem, LeBron, Akeem. Those are all top 10, top 12 players. How many more clubs you want? Now, people get into this. Well, Nick Wright yesterday, it was very sad, yelled at me. He doesn't score enough points. Hey, Colin, the scoring days. Nick Wright yesterday.
Do you know where Kawhi Leonard ranks in NBA history in points? I'll answer it for you. You don't, because no one does, because the rankings only go through 250, and he ain't in the top 250, Colin. I got three names for you. Wesley Matthews, Marvin Williams, and Jeff Teague. Those three all-time greats have all scored more points in their career than Kawhi.
Oh, so scoring now is the barometer. Do you know the top 15 all-time scoring list in the NBA includes Elvin Hayes, Moses Malone, Dominique Wilkins, and Paul Pierce? So it's scoring now that matters. By the way, Melo is 17th. And nobody likes Melo. He's 17th. Think about that. There's about 15 guys a roster. Melo's 17th all time. So scoring's it? Elvin Hayes. I apologize to the Elvin Hayes fan club, but I don't think scoring's that big of a deal. I mean, you got to be able to score. So what I'm saying is, and he's 29 years old, meaning he's on a path to surpass Michael and LeBron. If he wins this year, he's going to have a third title, third team, third finals MVP, all-star MVP, defensive player of the year. There's only one player in the history of the league that has more than three finals MVPs. So there's only one. That's MJ. So he's going to have three of those. If he wins this year, he's one of the five best players in league history. MJ, LeBron, Magic, Kareem, Kawhi. Those are the five best players ever. If he wins the title and is MVP, look at the clubs he's in. He's in the clubs with all these guys and Akeem Olajuwon. Well, he's scoring. It's never been We don't talk about Karl Malone on this show. We don't talk about Dirk and Elvin Hayes and Moses Malone. We don't talk Dominique Wilkins. We bash Melo. It ain't a scoring league. That's not what you tell me matters. You've never said that matters. What matters is you're the best player on the best team, and they go to you. Who, in your opinion today, if I said, who's the best get-a-bucket, get-a-stop guy in the NBA? And it's not LeBron. Now, Giannis may be the get-a-stop guy, and you could argue LeBron is the get-a-bucket guy. But I would argue the best get-a-stop and get-a-bucket guy in the league right now is Kawhi Leonard. That was MJ. That's what you tell me matters. Get a bucket, get a stop. MJ. Folks, we're 3 months away. Top five. What about Kobe? Kobe was never the get a stop guy in the NBA. Kobe didn't have all those clubs. Kobe's not in those clubs. And Kobe had the best coach. Think about this. If this cat wins with the Clippers, he'll have won finals MVP, youngest ever, with Popovich and his rigid system. Then he goes to Canada. Hell, Canada can't even win in hockey anymore. They haven't won a Stanley Cup since the early 90s. That's their sport. They can't even win in hockey. He goes to Canada and wins. And then he's going to go to the Clippers, who have never gone to the conference finals and have been around forever. And you don't think he's a top 10? I'd put him right after Kareem. Am I nuts? Am I crazy? You start joining all these clubs, and I see who's in the club. You know, if you were in a club with Bill Gates and Warren Buffett, I figure you're pretty rich because that's the club you're in. And I'm not in it, and they're in it, so I'd say you're one of the richest people in the world. Jeff Bezos, Bill Gates, and Warren Buffett are in a club. I'm going to guess it's a rich guy club. You give me a club with LeBron, Michael Jordan, I see all these clubs, and Kareem, that's a top five all-time club. That's
rich,
what
rich is kind of an understatement there.
Yeah, beyond rich.
That's the uber wealthy. I thought we consensus decided that Kawhi was the best player in the league last year.
He's two, really close. I saw him against Giannis.
Two to Giannis?
No, I think LeBron and.
But Kawhi. LeBron was injured last year.
Last year. Yeah.
With KD, LeBron injured, winning the championship, that Kawhi was the best player in the league last year. I mean, I've been operating off of that.
Yeah. What I just said outrageous?
No, it's just outrageous because
it feels like it's too fast.
It's too fast, and Kawhi doesn't fit in that box.
Doesn't talk, not stylish, weird laugh. By the way, he's the only guy in the league now that lives on the mid-range jumper. His game isn't even.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Oh, it's unstoppable. Yeah, we've said this before. He's the only guy in the NBA. Two guys have ever looked like Michael. Kobe offensively and Kawhi defensively and offensively. That's it. Nobody else. When I look at Michael, Kawhi gives me Michael's strength, Michael's dexterity, Michael's defense. He's not as gifted as Michael is offensive. Michael's hand size, where he can like palm the ball and do things. Now he's not. I mean, Michael's better offensive player. Let's not argue that.
Right.
But there's a lot of Michael in Kawhi. There's a lot of Michael.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
John Smoltz, world champ, Hall of Famer, joining us from the MLB Network in New Jersey via the Coward Global Satellite Network. Baseball season starts today. All right, the Mookie Betts deal. Dodgers actually don't just hand those things out. They had Machado, they wouldn't pay him. They had Bryce Harper, they got out of that. Zach Greinke, they let him go to Arizona. This is not an organization, despite their attendance and revenue, that hands out big money. They did for Mookie. Why? What does he bring the others did not?
Well, he brings stability, star power, and on and off the field. Look, he's a guy that has a rare combination that I said that baseball needs. They need the power guy that can run, that can play defense, that can steal bases, and that's what you're getting in Mookie Betts. I mean, he's a very connected, streaky offensive machine, and not to mention his defense speaks for itself too. So he's truly the five weapon. They've gotten the other side of their town, the greatest player in the world, and Mike Trout. So now the Dodgers can boast they've got player 1A, really. I mean, that's how good Mookie Betts can be. And I think the storyline is going to be year in and year out. Mookie Betts and Mike Trout talk in California. And don't be surprised if Mookie Betts doesn't win an MVP or two along the way during this contract.
Now, what does this do for Aaron Judge? Compare what Aaron Judge does. Now, again, really likable guy, big power. You know, he's Paul Bunyan-esque with that size. Is Aaron Judge in that kind of category of talent for the Yankees?
He is. But the one thing that, you know, you get a little concerned, he's going to have to prove he can go through a full campaign without being, you know, injury prone. That's the one knock on his size and stature in the game. He's one of my favorite players to watch play baseball. We don't see many players like him, built like him. And unfortunately, he's run into a few years of just some injuries that need to go away before he's going to get that monster deal. You just can't even fathom the numbers he's going to put up in his ballpark because it's tailor-made. I mean, there isn't a ballpark he can't hit a ball out of any part of the ballpark. But I want to see him be healthy. I want to see him play a full year and see what he can do because his skills, although be it, you know, people ask me, who would you pick between Mookie Betts, right fielder, and Aaron Judge, right fielder? And I said, honestly, it depends on which park they're playing in because if they're playing in Fenway, I'm taking Mookie Betts because he's another center fielder that can cover that incredible right field oddity that they have. If they're playing in Yankee Stadium, I'm taking Aaron Judge. And that's really how close these guys are, but how different they are from their body type. And I just want to see him stay healthy.
So yesterday I was watching some highlights. The Astros got three guys got thrown at, got hit by a pitch. And I think to myself, all right, well, we're going to see some of this, right? We're going to see some of it. Were you ever comfortable, John? I mean, what they did is viewed by baseball as players as really egregious, like next level, knew the pitch is coming. Would you have thrown at somebody if somebody would have asked you to throw? Would you have needed to be asked to throw at an Astro? Like, where would it land for you that they literally were cheating, knowing what John Smoltz was throwing, and that absolutely punctures your momentum, limits your numbers? Where do you land on this?
Yeah, so I was the type of player that was very conscientious of throwing a ball and what damage I could do to somebody. And so unless my manager, which rarely happened, was telling me that I had to do something for the protection of our players, which is really more of what my era was about, protecting your teammates when they got hit, I definitely wouldn't hit a guy because I couldn't get him out. And this scenario you're posing is certainly one that, you know, we anticipated in a full season what was going to happen to them from the backlash that they got. But I don't think, again, enough people know how to do it right. These pitches that we're seeing here can be easily described as it wasn't egregious, but anything that happens with the Astros is going to be looked upon as somebody did it on purpose because of the scenario that's sent out. If pitchers know how to command the baseball, which I argue not a lot of them do,
yeah,
then you're going to get these mistakes that hit the Astros, and right or wrong, you're going to basically say they did it on purpose. From a standpoint of an organization going into a season having done what they did, that would have to come for me from the manager, and then you execute it and you're done. You don't keep doing it.
Yeah. So, what is the feeling in baseball? So it's always been, you know, in a long season, either the pitchers or the hitters, you dominate April and May. And, you know, for veteran players, they need more time. Now, this is not a marathon. This is a sprint. We're starting in the heat of July. So inside baseball, do you think pitchers or hitters have a slight or significant edge in the first part of this 60-game slate?
Yeah, it's a great question that I've been really trying to ponder as far as, you know, what information are we getting? It's hard to follow what these inner squads were like. All I know is if you're the Yankees or you're the Nationals, you're tired of facing your own pitchers, which are pretty good. I think the hitters actually are going to have a little more advantage than typically that would happen in the start of the season. The pitchers would have an advantage. The weather, you said, is so important for hitters and the ball traveling. I mean, the ball is going to jump. And so pitchers typically are going to need a start or two to get accustomed to the up and down and just the adrenaline rush of pitching in a game that counts. And so I'm going to give the hitters a slight advantage. I did not think this was going to be the case 3 months ago. I thought the hitters would be at a bigger disadvantage because what you're going to see early on is managers trying to figure out how to manage the first week of the season, meaning do they try to steal wins? Do they access every one of their bullpen guys? See, the limits that were put on baseball over 162, you don't think you could have now, meaning relievers going three in a row, whereas a no-no in 162, I don't think you can say that now. I'd have a reliever pitch three games in a row knowing that the season's shorter. So many more components come into this with the strategy that can be employed to win a baseball game especially from teams that typically didn't have a chance when the season started, in theory, over 162 is going to make this so exciting. And I would be very leery of the teams like the Marlins, like the Royals, like the teams that we just kind of discarded into a rebuilding season. You know, there's only going to be a handful of teams that really don't have a chance in this 60 games, but everybody else sure does.
Yeah, I saw an over-under the other day, like Fox bet, and I couldn't believe how many teams were between like 30 wins and 35. I mean, if you finish, you know, six games out, that's like significant this year. So I think it's going to be playoff baseball feeling very quickly. It is interesting with no players, no fans, excuse me. So as a pitcher, you're on the mound. And, you know, you come out with your best stuff, but you get into these middle innings and you're really scrapping. And I think to myself, God, if I was at home at Yankee Stadium and I got not much left in the tank, that juice of the Bronx could get me through a tough inning. That juice in Atlanta, that crowd. Or am I wrong in that you guys are on the mound, you totally tune out fans. They've never gotten you. You've never punched a guy out based on energy. Like, I do think for a pitcher, I can't imagine being at home in front of 60,000 people at Yankee Stadium or 32,000 at Fenway, and that juice doesn't help you rear back and give you a little something, and that's all gone now.
Absolutely. I think you're going to see personalities really come into play that affect the player and those confines you're talking about. For example, not to pick on players or use them in an adverse way, but a guy like Stroman for the Mets, an energy type pitcher, feeds off the crowd, feeds off the moment. He uses all of that. Or a hitter like Tim Anderson, who loves the flair and he had a fantastic year. Those guys are going to have to manufacture that because it's not going to be there for them. And so the guys that are disciplined, a guy on the opposite spectrum, like Kluber, he's very emotionless on the mound. That's not going to bother him. He's not going to use that. He doesn't use that. So I'm intrigued to watch the players that are going to be so motivated internally that nothing else is going to take away from their discipline. Like the guy we're seeing right now in Clayton Kershaw, he doesn't need the crowd, but he feeds off the crowd too. So you have this hand-in-hand kind of battle of here's the thing to look for. In the second or third week of the season, players on teams that were expected to win or maybe not fall five or six games out, what happens? Do players drift? Do they lose focus because the environment of 60 games and no fans? These are the kind of things that are going to be a challenge for a lot of players who are trying to go into this with no experience. I know for me as a player, I had a hard time my first 3 years playing in front of 1,500, maybe 2,000 County Stadium. I heard vendors. I heard noises. I drifted. I thought of things on the mound I should never have thought of. I learned how to put that away. But as a veteran, as after 20 years, I would have learned in this environment, challenge myself with little games, little goals that I had each game to be able to stay locked in. I needed to challenge myself. That worked for me. Other guys might have a benefit from no fans with the pressure being off in a city where there's so much expected like Philadelphia. I think the Phillies might thrive, not because they don't have a good team, but because the pressure for them to have a good team with their fan base, they have the greatest fan base that is against the visitor, but can turn against the home player if he doesn't get it done. That's not going to be there. So maybe guys have better years in cities like that.
It's funny. John, it's so funny that I grew up and the Braves were terrible, but they had really interesting players like Jeff Burrows and Ralph Garr. I mean, they had good players. I forget that your early years, because I think of John Smoltz and I think of packed houses and World Series. You played on a crappy team or two early. You did.
First 3 years, and we were bad, terrible. Matter of fact, I remember going in my first, you know, when I just got there, I was trying to find out all the places to go. I went into a comedy shop to just kind of kick back, and every joke was about the Atlanta Braves. And it was awful. It was funny at first and then awful. It's like, I'm telling you, know, that's about us. And so, you know, you learn how to deal with those environments. Athletes are creatures of habits. This is a challenge because the creature of habit has been thrown away. Rules that they have to abide by, of course, uncomfortable places you're going to be that you're not used to being. And then once you get in that between those white lines, there is a difference between the great ones that can focus with no fans there and the ones that can focus with 40, 50,000.
Yeah.
And that is going to be a challenge. Good thing that they had these times and these inner squads to get used to it, because it would be very eerie if they had to just jump into something that they've never done they've never done this before.
A champ in 95, Hall of Famer John Smoltz at the MLB Network in New Jersey. Good seeing you, bud. Appreciate it.